This is episode number 559 with Bozma St. John. Welcome to the School of Greatness. My name is Lewis Howes, former pro athlete turned lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you an inspiring person or message to help you discover how to unlock your inner greatness. Thanks for spending some time with me today. Now let the class begin. A brand for a company is like a reputation for a person. You earn reputation by trying to do hard things well. It's by Jeff Bezos. And today we've got Bozma St. John on, who is the chief brand officer at Uber as of June 2017. And previously, she was a marketing executive at Apple Music, where she came over from Beats. And before that, she was at PepsiCo, heading their music and entertainment marketing. She has been listed on Billboard Magazine's list of the top women in music, Fast Company's 100 Most Creative People, and Adweek's Most Exciting Personalities in Advertising. She was awarded Executive Woman of the Year by Billboard Music in 2016. And I had a blast connecting with Bose here in the studio in Los Angeles. And what we covered are why she left Apple Music to head up branding at Uber, how to cultivate your intuition, the big mistakes that brands make once they are successful, the true power of marketing, and why people will forgive anything you do if you ignite their passion. This one's all about her story, how she's built massive brands, and how she's managed brands that maybe have gone through some periods of dislike in the public space. And before we dive in, I want to give a shout out to the fan of the week. This is from Blake Sales, who says, "You won't regret listening to this podcast. The various topics and interviews with other respected individuals will make a difference in your life, and you will continuously want to utilize them as a resource to be more well-rounded individual. Thank you for making a difference in so many people's lives." So Blake Sales, thank you for being the review of the week. And if you guys want a chance to be shouted out on the podcast, then make sure to leave a review over on iTunes right now or on the podcast app that you're listening to and get a chance to be a shout out for the week. All right, guys, I think you're going to love this one. A powerful story, powerful conversation, and powerful human being. Give it up for the one, the only, Bozma St. John.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It's packed with benefits to help unlock more value from your business purchases. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
When it comes to scents, you should pick ones that smell like, well, you. Target gets it, which is why they offer a range of personal care products with fragrances for everyone. Be true to floral you with Dove Peony and Rose Body Wash. Live your fresh life with Degree Ultra Clear Deodorant. Express your decadent side with Love Beauty and Planet Coconut Shampoo. This spring, choose care that brings you joy beyond labels. Pick up new favorites at a Target near you or online at Target.com.
Welcome, everyone, back to the School of Greatness podcast. We have Bose St. John in the house.
Yay!
Good to see you.
Hi.
I'm very excited. Our mutual friend Lacey connected us.
Yes.
She was hounding me. She said, "You got to know who this person is. You got to have her on." I didn't know who you were until she was like sending me every video about you.
She was obsessive.
She was like, "No, this is my queen," right?
Gosh.
She was like obsessed with you. I said, "Okay, let me start digging in deeper." And I watched some of your videos and heard more of your story and was just like, okay, yeah, we need Bose in the house. So I'm excited that you're here.
Yay.
Congrats on everything that you've achieved and the impact you've made and the barriers you've broken through in the business world. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And you're originally from Ghana, right? And
yes.
Or you lived in Ghana for a number of years.
Yes, yes. My parents are from Ghana.
Parents are from Ghana.
I was born in the U.S.
Born in the U.S., but then you moved when you were young to Ghana.
Yeah, 6 months old.
Yeah.
So I had no recollection
right.
of my time in the U.S. before Ghana.
Yeah.
So that's why I claim that I'm from Ghana.
Got it.
Because that's where my earliest memories are.
Yeah.
From.
And when did you move back?
Well, there were a series of things that happened along the way. When I was five, my dad was in parliament and the government of Ghana for a president named Hilal Liman, who was overthrown in 1982 in a coup d'etat. And my dad was thrown into political detention.
Mm.
So we had to flee the country. My mom, who was pregnant with my youngest sister, and my two other younger sisters. So she had three young children, six and under, and pregnant.
How old were you?
I was six.
Six, wow.
Yeah. And so we came to the U.S., to Washington, D.C., political asylum.
Wow.
And then we were in the U.S. for about a year. My dad was released. He joined us here. But he's always been very politically active. And so he wants to return to Africa, although we couldn't go back to Ghana. So we went to Nairobi, Kenya, where we were for about 3 years until it became democratic in Ghana again. And then we went back.
Wow. How long in Kenya? 3 years, you said?
Yeah, about 3 years in Nairobi.
I went to a private boarding school in eighth grade.
Uh-huh.
And I was in a middle school boys' dorm. And my first roommate was from Kenya.
Really?
He spoke like seven languages, Swahili, Kikuyu, like all these languages.
This is what I'm saying. Yes.
It was crazy.
This is the thing. Is it like, you know, I think there's such a crazy misperception about Africans. But it's really an Afropolitanness, is what I call it.
Yeah.
Because you are required, you know, to know so much about the world. And because of colonization, you have people who speak Portuguese and French and
a lot of
English,
French.
Obviously. A lot of French. And there's lots of Indian immigrants, lots of Lebanese immigrants, lots of Korean immigrants. So you end up, first of all, the cultures all mesh together.
Yeah.
And then language. So you have people who speak like seven languages.
It's crazy.
They have nothing to do with their native language, by the way.
Right. How many do you speak?
I speak three.
Three languages.
Yeah. Two native and then one.
Got it. Got it.
Well, obviously English.
Amazing. Okay, so you moved to Kenya and then you came back.
Yeah, then we went back to Ghana when I was almost 10. And then we moved to Colorado Springs, Colorado when I was almost 13. And that is where I feel like my formative years really took shape. So when people ask me where I'm from, I usually say I'm bicultural, that I'm Ghanaian. But I grew up in Colorado Springs, Colorado.
Right, right.
Yeah.
That's when you learned the most probably about yourself.
Yes, things started crystallizing.
Yeah,
my character started getting sharpened.
Sure.
In Colorado Springs.
But you're probably like, you know, it was mostly like just white people, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah.
So you're like just stood out, right?
Mostly. Dude, it was
everyone.
You're like, literally everyone.
Did you go to public school, private school?
Yes, I went to public school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, Liberty High School. What was that like?
And were you this kind of personality when you were?
Yeah. I've always been pretty loud.
Hey, use your voice.
Yes. Pretty outgoing always. Except that, I mean, when I came, I mean, it was really tough. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like, you know, everything was roses. There were a lot of well-meaning and well-intentioned people. Not just the kids, the teachers, people at the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. But just uneducated.
Anyway, not educated at all. You know, didn't have a world perspective, which was actually shocking to me, right? Because again, my feeling is like, okay, you're in Africa, you are expected to have a world perspective. There's all kinds of people running around, you're speaking all kinds of different languages, and then you come to the place where it's supposed to be like the better world, the better place, and people have never left. My classmates didn't have passports.
Yeah, probably never left the state, right?
No, didn't really have a good sense of the world outside of Colorado Springs. They didn't even have a sense of the world outside Denver. And so they were very much in their own world. And that's why, like, I'm not angry about whatever that I went through because I just didn't know any better. I want people to know better. I want people to have more exposure. I think, obviously, technology has helped us out a lot with that because this was 1989, where it's like what you were listening to was on the TV and on the radio, and then you went to the mall. You know, there wasn't a lot of exposure.
No cell phones.
There's nothing to give you a broader view than whatever is being fed to you.
Newspaper, magazine, TV.
Yeah. All they saw were naked kids with, like, you know, Sally Struthers and, like, distended bellies.
Yeah. From Africa. Yeah,
from Africa.
Yeah.
They didn't know that there were skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Or that people drove luxury vehicles. They had no clue. And so there was a lot of involuntary teaching that I had to do. making sure that like my classmates understood why I had a sense of pride, that I wasn't embarrassed. Because then, you know, you're 12, and so there's a lot of teasing going on, sure. and people making fun of you and stuff.
What were the big challenges you faced in high school then? Besides the ignorance or uneducated peers, but yeah. was there anything else underneath that?
Yeah, there was a lot of racial tension.
Really?
Yeah. I was also coming into my own, and so I was trying to form my own opinions on race and class and sexual orientation. It was also around the time when Matthew Shepard was beaten to death. In fact, that incident changed even my relationship with religion, because my parents were, Colorado Springs is a hotbed for evangelical Christianity.
Sure.
So we went to a mega church, you know, one of those where it's like three services, each service is like 7,000 people,
yeah.
you know, that kind of thing.
It's like Joel Osteen style.
Pastor Ted was our guy. He sat on the pulpit and preached a message of hate the weekend that Matthew Shepard was killed. It was interesting because even then, even though I didn't really have a good sense of, I mean, I didn't know anybody who was gay or openly gay in my high school. Or,
really?
No, I, you know, my,
before
my parents.
Before it became kind of popular or.
Yeah. Before
acceptable.
it was more open, right? And my parents definitely did not talk about that kind of thing in my house. But what I knew was what I was feeling as Pastor Ted stood on the pulpit and condemned this young person, a person who was my age, who had been beaten to death.
He made him wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
wow. Yeah. He made him wrong.
Really?
He made him the enemy. Yeah.
Wow. That's not good.
Oh, dude. It was not good at all. But this is like crowd thing too, right? People were applauding and cheering and the crowd was, you know, and it's like 7,000 people who were screaming. And think about that. He did that three times that day. And
oh,
so when
gosh.
I got home, I mean, I was just shaken, you know, and I knew I didn't want to go back to the church.
How old were you then?
I was, I don't know, 16
wow.
probably.
Yeah.
And my dad was a deacon. My mom like ran the Sunday school.
The whole thing.
We sat in the front row behind his wife and his kids.
You were embedded in the church.
Yeah, it's like, you know, so the decision the next Sunday to be like, I don't feel that good. I just want to sit. And then the second week, I don't know if I'm feeling, you know, it became a real problem with me and my parents.
So how did you have the courage to kind of open up at 16 of like, hey, I don't believe or I don't feel comfortable with this type of thinking, the way you guys have lived your entire life?
Yeah. I definitely could not have articulated it then, what it meant or what I was feeling. All I knew was that I hated the way that I didn't like the like feeling of blood vengeance, you know what I mean, in the church. And I knew it made me feel uncomfortable and scared. It was very similar to sometimes how I felt like even in the classroom, where it's like if people don't feel like you're an other, how they can gang up on you. I knew that feeling was not great and I didn't want anything to do with it.
Sure.
So at that point, I was just like, I just don't want anything to do with it. I don't want to be in that space. And like I said, I mean, I was volunteering at Sunday school. I was part of the youth group.
You were singing. You were playing piano.
I was in the choir. I had a tambourine. You know, like I had the whole thing going.
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it. And I stayed at home.
Really? From then on, you never went back?
From then on, I never went back.
What was that like with your parents?
Oh, terrible.
Convincing them? Or
nope. You know, my dad said I was an embarrassment. My mom was more understanding. But, you know, my dad, he just felt like he was embarrassed. His oldest daughter.
Mm-hmm. Should be leading the example, not...
Yes, setting the example, especially when you're African. You know what I mean? It's like, you set the example for the rest of your siblings in everything, whether it's sports or academics or boys, religion. You know, you have to be the best. That way they can follow your lead. And so if I'm staying home and being like, no, I'm not doing that, then imagine what happens, right? You end up causing riots in your own house. Acts of defiance. But I just couldn't do it, man. I don't know. I can't really even articulate it now, but I knew that was it. I couldn't go back.
Wow. And were you able to cool things off with your father or?
Yeah. I mean, eventually we just found, I only had 2 years left to go.
Right. So you're like, I'm out of here.
I was out of there.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I just sort of avoided the subject.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
all functioning families.
That's like great teenagers do,
correct.
Right?
We just decide not to speak about it. Just like ignore it altogether.
What would you say is one of the biggest challenges you went through then growing up, whether it be internally or through external issues or challenges from being in Africa or being in DC or being in Colorado Springs? Or was there anything that you feel like kind of defined and shaped you?
There's a couple of things. One, like of course, now in retrospect, I can look back and say, wow, you know what? Like I had to stand up tall because I am tall and I'm so different. And now it's almost like a blessing because I'm clearly facing the same thing in Silicon Valley now, where it's like, oh, okay, you're one. You know, there's no, you look around, there's no one else who looks anything like you.
No, you're one of a kind.
And so I've already been through that, so it's not scary. I don't feel fear in that, right? Or being other. But it took me a long time to like find self-love, just because like when you're faced with not being the object of desire or beauty, or you're not anywhere near the epitome of what it should be, it takes a long time. I think, as you know, as a teenager, as a kid, as a young woman coming into your own, it takes a long time to then discover that, oh yeah, no, I'm beautiful in my own way. You know, that like being this tall and this dark and this, that, and that, you know, it's like, that's okay. I am okay. I don't have to be these other things in order to be accepted. That was tough. Mm. That was hard. It's hard being a teenager.
Oh my gosh.
And trying to like...
It's the worst.
Oh, it's awful.
The teenager year is the worst for me.
Worst. Oh my God, they're so miserable. I'm really excited when I meet young women who either are struggling with their own sort of worth and being and coming into, you know, their own, because you feel so awkward anyway. And if you're in any kind of situation in which you feel other, you're just looking for connections. Looking for anything.
To fit in.
To fit feel. In anything. And so even for me, like, I feel like those years helped also strengthen need for like storytelling and communication. I feel like I really have been groomed for the career I've had because of that. I had to become the instant source of everything cool. I had to know it better than anyone.
Because then
right?
You were like so accepted,
yeah, because
survival.
Then, because then you're the cool kid. You know, then everybody wants to be your friend, right? If you know the latest fashion, you know the latest music, you know all the sports info. Dude, I was an encyclopedia.
Wow. Yeah. Before Google.
Oh.
You were Google.
Let me tell you something, okay? I wish I'd been a Google, all right? Okay? I'd have been on that, like,
yeah.
Let me figure out what I need to know about whatever sports scores. No, you had to actually do the work.
Wow.
I had to watch all the games. I had to listen to...
Read the newspapers.
Yes,
like everything.
Magic
yes.
FM, 24/7. Read all Teen Beat. Spent all my time at the mall. You had to get the information in any way possible so that at school, I could be the source of all the info. Be the coolest kid around.
Mm. What would you say is your greatest gift now?
Probably my intuition. That's also been crafted over time.
How did you cultivate that?
Lots of failure. Lots of not trusting it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the feeling, regardless of where you are. You know, it's not just about like work or whatever. It's about people. Like meeting somebody and being like, that person ain't right.
Mm.
It doesn't matter who they are. Because, you know, this always happens, right? It's like somebody introduces you to somebody. Oh, you know, they're super amazing because they've done blah, 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 blah. And they're like bragging on this person. And you meet them and you're like,
something's off.
I don't think so. And knowing that that is actually okay, that you should listen to it and back up. Don't go forward with this person because something ain't right. I don't know what it is, but something ain't right. And so I've got to listen to that. It also works for jobs. Every time I have ignored it, it has been bad.
Miserable jobs, right?
Miserable situations. Or like, just in general, I feel like just being able to trust it, and it comes in various ways, whether it's like that feeling of an ease, or it's like that little voice, or just something. And it's different for everybody, but for me, I've tried to hone it so that now I react more quickly, and I don't question it any longer.
Really? In every situation, even in like intimate relationships or...
Every situation, everything.
Really?
Yeah, it comes down to interviews, everything.
Well, I'm glad you had the intuition to come in here. Didn't walk out on me right away.
No, not at all. But the truth be told, if I had walked in here and felt like there was some weirdness, I'd just be like, hey, listen, this ain't happening today. I appreciate you. Keep doing what you're doing, but I gotta go.
Wow, have you done that before?
Oh, I have. Oh, yeah.
No way.
No, I have. Hands, yes.
For like press or interviews or whatever.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, because you know what? You can tell. I know it won't work out. It won't work out in my favor for sure. It might work out for them.
Yeah.
And so why am I sacrificing myself? No. Before, like, I would feel bad and I would need to like try to explain. Now folks need explanation. It might also be because I turned 40 and now I give
like
zero.
Don't care. Yeah.
So if I don't feel it, I don't feel like I need to excuse it to anybody.
Wow.
That is not for me. Thank you. I'm off to do this.
Right. Now, did you always know that you were going to be executive at a big brand and kind of like shaping culture at these different brands?
Nope. I thought I was going to be a doctor.
Really?
Yes. An obstetrician specifically.
Well, tell me what that is. I'm ignorant.
That's a person who births babies.
Oh, wow. Really? Yeah, I've never given out a baby, so that's probably why I don't know that. Yeah.
I have. Yes.
Okay. Wow. Crazy.
Oh,
that's what you wanted to do? What, in high school, college?
That's what I wanted to do in high school. Well, I mean, again, because of the influence of African parents, there were three careers I could go into. It was like
lawyer,
I could
be a, doctor,
engineer.
Engineer.
Yes. See, you know, do you have African parents? Are you?
No, no.
You don't. Okay. Fantastic. Well, that's fine. Anyway,
it's kind of like Asian parents, yeah. African parents. It's like,
why is it? Why are those the careers? Like, why is
it's
that?
It's the safe. It's the like credible. It's like it's the one, yeah. They made it. Yeah.
I don't know. Whatever. It's a badge of honor, I guess. And so I chose doctor because I was good at sciences and math. And, you know, again, because of where I was, I think I was given like some sort of extra praise, you know, because it was like I was a lone black girl. Oh, and I was super smart at like science and math. It was like, whoa, my God, this person that doesn't exist. You know,
it was like, oh. Unicorn.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, my God. And so it felt like that's what I should be doing. And so that's where I just went.
When did that shift?
In college. I went to college pre-med, took full course load in the sciences. I was a biology major. And then I took a class my freshman year called African American Studies because there was a guy in there that was real hot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to lie. Followed him to that class.
Like, okay, cool.
And then the professor was so amazing. This guy, Ashraf Rushdie, incredible professor. And it just opened up my mind. I mean, again, coming from Colorado Springs, there was no African American anything being taught anywhere.
Right, right.
And so I walk into this class and it was like, it wasn't just history, it was literature, it was poetry.
Music.
Yeah,
everything.
It was just culture. It was mind blowing to me. I forgot the guy. I was like, what
you
guy?
Fell in love with something else. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, 100%. And then it was like the gateway drug.
Catalyst.
Yeah, the catalyst, because it just opened up to other things. There was an American Studies professor who I also really liked a lot, Karichi, who was also teaching things about culture, but American culture. So now it's like not just African-American culture. How did African-American culture impact American culture? How did Asian culture impact American culture? How did immigrants? It was such a confounding thing to me to think about American culture and how that would all come together based on all these inputs and over time. And also at the time, Tupac had been killed.
Mm.
He was my favorite artist.
Oh, yeah.
I knew everything. Love. I mean, come on. Hey, ambitious is a rider. You know what I mean? We could go toe to toe. Okay. You don't want to battle me today. Okay.
I'm not even going to try. Don't worry.
Don't even do
it. You know much more about me.
Don't even do it. Okay.
Culture, music, everything. I can African dance, though. I've been doing some African dancing.
You know what? Don't make me challenge you.
It's almost like the chicken dance, right?
I swear to you. Listen.
I've got video of me doing it.
We will push this table away and get... No, in fact, we'll get on the table. Okay?
Exactly, yeah.
And battle it out.
One of my favorite parts about my job is that I get the opportunity to travel a lot. And in fact, I'm recording this right now while I'm in Mexico. And actually, I was thinking about something that I wanted to share because I get a lot of questions from so many people about different side hustle ideas. So here's one for those of you out there that are on the go a lot like I am or traveling a lot. When you're staying in your Airbnb on your trips, have you ever thought about how you could be making extra money by hosting through Airbnb while your home is vacant? If you're interested in an extra stream of income, Airbnb hosting is an easy place to start, and it's like giving your home some company while you're away. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. So listen, we all know life is full of yada yada, like those quote unquote free trials that somehow still charge your card for something, or when companies have those sneaky gotchas hiding deep in the fine print. And I know you've dealt with yada yada before, like those bills that keep going up and up for no reason at all, or when budget airlines promise a cheap fare but then charge you for every little thing until you realize you're paying more than you would have somewhere else. And yes, it is possible to outsmart yada yada, like triple checking airline deals to make sure all you need is already included, but you don't take yada yada in life. So don't take yada yada from your wireless provider. Metro by T-Mobile has no contracts, no credit checks, no surprises, and nada yada yada. Stop by one of over 6,000 Metro stores nationwide. When you want the best, you have to act quickly.
or someone else will get it instead. Like when you're trying to buy tickets for the best seat at your favorite team's big game. Or when you're hiring for your business and you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. With ZipRecruiter, you can find qualified candidates fast. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I believe finding the right team member is one of the most important steps in setting up my company for success. We like to ensure our new hires will be a good fit before they're even on the team. So I am grateful that I have ZipRecruiter's help when we want to grow the team fast. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/greatness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
But anyway, so I heard that there was a class being taught at USC on Tupac, basically using his lyrics as like poetry, you know, like his lyrics as a sign of the times.
And you were going to USC this whole time?
No, I was going to Wesleyan University. I was in Connecticut.
Wow.
Way on the other side of the country.
And you heard about a class
in
USC?
I heard about a class being taught at USC on Tupac. You know, it was in the moment, like he had just been killed. I was grieving and
like,
everything.
I have to take this.
Yeah. And wow. And so I tried to see if I could, like, I went to the dean, tried to see if I could do like a, I don't know, some sort of transfer class or something. Like, could I like listen in and like get credits?
So pre-online courses. Yeah.
You know what? Will you tell these youngins how good
exactly,
they have it? You know what
right?
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Pre-online classes, man. So they said no. Then I was like, ooh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to have Karichi, who's my American Studies professor, teach the class.
No way.
So I made a proposal. I took it to him. He said no. And then he said, here's what we do. He was like, if you create, he's like, you've already created the syllabus. You've already created it. He was like, if you teach it, I will support you and you can get credit as well as get other students to get credit. And I was like,
you taught the class?
For 3 semesters.
Shut up.
Yeah.
You taught?
Yeah, with the waiting list. Man, I was popping.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was what, junior, senior, or what?
So I taught it both semesters junior and the first semester of my.
They let a student teach class.
Teach a class. Yeah. I petitioned, and it was incredible. I think everybody knew I was serious because I was so committed and I really had done my work and my research.
Because you probably talked to the teacher and you see and you're like, what's the outline?
Oh my God. I did everything. I wrote letters. I corresponded with the students who took
collect
the class.
Collect calls, pagers, everything.
Dude,
you know,
everything,
you're beeping people.
Okay. I was, yes, at 411. Yes. Okay. Like, I would send the codes, all of it. I mean, you know, the hallway phone would ring and I'd run to it and be like, hello. It's close. You know, it's about 2 by class. It was so nuts. I think at first, probably the students thought like this would be fun and easy because it's a class on hip hop, which there were zero
nothing.
Classes like that. Plus, it's like a fellow student who's teaching it.
Oh, it's going to be a piece of cake.
And it was at night. It was going to be a good time. But no, we were being very serious about this and thoughtful. And I would say that it took maybe all of like 2 weeks before we were in. I mean, and we had some of the most dynamic conversations.
Wow.
It became more than just about the lyrics. It became the dialogue around what was happening in the country. You know, what would cause this very culturally aware, politically savvy young man to then speak primarily about a culture, because he's actually putting himself in a situation in which he actually didn't come from. You know, I think people forget that. Think like, oh, okay, he was just a thug on the corner selling drugs. No, that's not Tupac. His parents were Black Panthers. And so to think that, okay, he had a voice, he was choosing to be the voice for a group of people that were unheard, you know, became what I thought was worthy of academic discourse. So
wow.
Yeah, so
that
we'll talk about
it
for a long time.
Incredible. The things you probably learned about yourself from being a student to now a teacher to...
It was so great. It really was so great. A great, great time.
And so you decided after that, okay, no longer going into
that was
being
it.
A doctor,
that was
like,
it.
I'm going into what?
I don't know. I didn't have a name for it. I did graduate as pre-med. I applied to med schools, got in. I was on my way, but I'd also taken African-American studies as a major and English. So I was carrying 3 majors. Now I only claim African-American studies in English. When people ask me, like, what I graduate, because I'm just like, the biology, like, seriously,
sure,
I'm not even
doesn't
interested.
Matter. I don't even talk about school because I barely even went to class, you know. I just went to get good enough grades to play football.
See, okay.
And I it took me almost seven and a half years to graduate.
Oh, right.
And I went to like three different schools, transfer around a bunch.
Wow. Dude.
And have a sports marketing degree or whatever, sports management. I can't remember what it's called. But yeah, but
amazing.
I don't even use what I learned from there. It's like, yeah.
But isn't that the truth though? I don't feel like, you know, unless you're in some sort of like technical field.
Yeah.
I feel like college is a time, just like we're talking about, to discover who you are, what you want to do, who you want to be, you know, really sharpen your analytical and cultural thought.
Yeah.
And apply that.
For me, it was learning like just social skills, just understanding human beings and understanding how to really enroll people in an idea, which is what it sounds like you did. Yeah. Where you're like, I need to enroll my professor. I need to enroll the school.
Yes.
I need to enroll this other school to give me the information. I need to enroll students in this vision that you had.
Right, right.
And you enrolled people.
Yeah.
You learned what made people tick, what made people do say yes, say no, and you made it happen, which is the ultimate skill.
Well,
enrollment, getting people connected to a bigger
and
vision.
And engaging them in a thought, you know?
Uh-huh.
And it's so funny because when I was graduating, I mean, my parents were, you know, super proud because I graduated, like I said, pre-med. I was on
top
my way
class.
To everything was fine. I partied really hard.
It's great.
And so I had that going for me, like on my own notches on the belt type of situation,
where
I felt really good. So I came out of college feeling hella confident.
Mm-hmm. I own this world.
Oh, yeah. I was like, socially, I got this. Academically, I got this. You can't tell me nothing. And so I was like, well, you know what? I'm going to move to New York City because I can. Because why not? And my parents were like, okay, you could do that for a year and then you're going to school.
Right.
You know? And so I was like, all right, great. By the way, thank God it wasn't today. Like, I would have definitely talked myself out of that. I just didn't know that anything bad could happen to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because I just thought I was the greatest. This is the greatest thing that ever happened. I was super smart. Plus, I was like socially savvy. What could possibly go wrong?
What happened?
Oh, dude. Oh, my God.
So you moved there on your own?
Yeah, I moved there on my own.
Where did you move?
With, like,
Astoria,
one
Brooklyn,
friend.
Queens?
I moved to Harlem.
Okay, yeah.
Because I had one friend. She graduated the year before me, and she was going to Columbia Film School.
Wow, nice.
And so she
right
had a
Harlem.
Dorm.
Yeah,
yeah. She had a dorm room or like a dorm apartment that she shared with somebody else. And so she said I could sleep on her couch until I found a job. I thought I was going to walk into New York City and get a job right away. What? Look at me.
Like,
of course I'm going to win. Like, I don't even understand why somebody wouldn't give me a job.
Sure.
Oh, 3.5 months later, I'm still like looking for work on the couch and she's getting annoyed. The roommate definitely hates me.
Oh my gosh.
I have no money. My dad is definitely not sending me any kind of checks. I've made friends with the little bodega on the corner and this restaurant called El Floridita, which is on the corner of 125th.
Floridita.
Yes. Oh my God. This little like Dominican place.
Salsa dancing.
Dude.
Like, I've been there.
What?
I've salsa danced there.
You know what? I can't even take it. I'm about to get up and leave. What are you talking about?
I lived in New York City for a year and a half when I used to salsa dance in all the spots.
With the green like awning? They had the green on the...
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Yo, that was my spot.
Yeah.
I loved everybody in there with homies, okay? Like, they fed me when I couldn't pay for it.
That's good.
You know what I'm saying?
That's good. I didn't go there that much, but I used to know all the spots where they had salsa dancing.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But this is why I love when we think about like culture and connections with people and stuff like that. It didn't matter where I came from or that I'd gone to this super snobby school and thought I was like the biggest, illest thing. You make connections with people and they saved my life. They fed me.
That's amazing.
And actually, because I was in Floridita when the wonderful waitress who had become like an auntie to me was like, you need a job. And I'm like, I know, I'm trying to get a job. But I was like applying for these like highfalutin jobs that didn't make any sense. Now I look back on it and like I laugh at myself.
Yeah. You needed like an entry level.
Yeah, I need like an entry level job. And she had like a niece or something who signed up with a temp agency. And so she was like, oh, you know, you sign up and basically they'll, you know, you call them every night and they'll tell you where you need to go in the morning, right? So it's like it's transient work, basically. But
yeah,
I was
whatever,
anything.
Pay me 50, 100 bucks a day, whatever.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. I was making zero money, so anything would have been good. So I walked in there. They laughed at me because like, I had like, you know, a great degree and like all these experiences. I, you know, speak language. They were just like,
professor, this
yeah, they were like, what are you doing here? But they sent me out on jobs. I was a receptionist at a dog washing salon on the Upper East Side. I filed like National Geographic's at this one place for like 2 months, which was awful. Nearly lost my mind in that one. God, I did so many little things. Oh, I was what do they call them? When, you know, you're like serving at a party, you're wearing like the tux.
Yeah, like
catering. Yes. So I did that a few times, which by the way, I mean, all of these experiences.
It's like what every model does.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. Exactly. Cater. Except I was, you know, I was in the club though. out in those streets. Get to know people, and God, all the clubs in New York then, which were just so fun and just crazy. I also made so many good friends at that time, because all of like the assistants or people who were like entry level at their own places would like get you in to the party. So like my good friend Moksha Fitzgibbons, who's now very senior at Complex Magazine, I met him that way.
Wow.
You know, where like I would go to their magazine release parties, because they have one every month.
Uh-huh.
And you know, pass hors d'oeuvres were free. You know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
Open bar.
Oh, yeah.
So I go and eat there, right? It was great. That just hustling to make it. And then one day I got the divine intervention, the call that it was like, okay, Spike Lee had fired his assistant and they needed me to go cover phones the next day. So it was.
You were like, oh, this is my jam.
I was like.
Something like this.
I was like, yeah, this is made for me. You know, so I go in there, I'm wearing like the only gray suit I own. I've pulled my hair back into like a severe bun. I'm wearing these little tiny pearls because I want it to look professional. And I walk in there and he's like, they sent me Miss America. That's literally what he said to me. Like,
wow.
I was like, wah, 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 like all shriveled out, you know, like,
oh my gosh.
You know, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to get fired before I even answer the first phone. And he was like, who are you? You know, and I was like, oh, I'm Bozeman St. John. You know, I was like, it's an honor to meet you. That I just want to help. You know, like, where do you want me? He's just like, just sit down, okay, and answer the phone.
Wow.
Because here I thought I was going to be doing some big stuff, right? But that turned into a month of answering the phones. I was
so
getting coffee.
So he could come back the next day.
Yeah, I got the dry cleaning, anything, lunch for anybody in the office, everything, whatever needed to be done. I mean, I was fixing the copying machine. Anything that needed to be done, I was doing. Meanwhile, my dad is like calling me constantly and screaming, right? You have an Ivy League degree.
Yeah, what
and
are you
you're
doing?
Getting coffee. You know, he's so pissed. And then again, moment of divine intervention. Spike had just finished writing Bamboozled, one of his films that to me is one of the greatest.
I remember this.
Yes. Pieces of like, you know, just what racial conflict is like in America,
yes.
Right? And what it means and all that. Very, very deep film. He finished writing it, and he threw it down on the desk, and he was like, take a look at this. I didn't know any better. I thought he meant, like, mark it up, because, yeah, I was an English major. And I mean, I was like, oh, let me grab my red pen.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And I marked this thing up. Like, I marked it up. Now, like, I literally could die sitting here and being like,
here you go, boss. Like,
right?
This is a month in, 2 months? Or?
Like, yes, like 6 weeks in.
Wow.
Like, I've been getting the coffee and the dry cleaning.
Wow.
Who do you think you are? You just walk in, now you're going to be marking up Spike Lee's script. Like, that's what you're going to do? But, like, yeah, he came the next thing. He's like, what'd you think of it? And I was like, oh, yeah, I made some notes. And he was like,
notes?
You made notes on my script? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And so he, like, he just shook his head. And I remember, like, literally everyone snickering, you know, around. And I was like, oh, my God, now I'm really going to get fired, you know? And he goes into his office. Like, an hour later, he walks back out. He's just like, what do you do again? And that was it. That was it. I had a full-time job.
No way.
I got promoted. Yep, I had a little desk. Then I became like the assistant account executive. I didn't even know what the hell that was. But I told my dad I have benefits, you know? So
you're not a temp anymore, yeah.
I was not a temp anymore. So I just continued to do anything he said. I helped out at the office. And he had started this advertising agency called Spike DDB, which was on Madison Avenue in connection with DDB Worldwide, the agency that Mad Men was based off of. So, you know, it's a big deal. New York City, you know, feeling real important.
Now
so,
you're getting 35 grand a year and you're,
oh, dude,
you're feeling like...
What, 35 grand? That was...
What was it
no,
back then?
It was like 26? $23,000
wow.
a year. Yeah,
yeah.
$23,000 a year.
I remember my sister, when she worked in New York City for a couple of years, I think it was around like 23, 26
yeah.
grand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Full-time, 80 hours a week type
full-time.
Of...
Full-time.
Yeah.
All your good years.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. So how long were you with Spike?
4 years.
4 years.
I was there 4 years. And it was such a great 4 years.
Wow.
We worked on so many ads because he was creating his ad agency and trying to, again, change the narrative of what was happening in advertising. So remember he did those Nike ads?
He was famous. I mean, it's one of the greatest campaigns
Jordan
of all time.
Of all time. So he had turned that into his own pursuit, right? Where we did obviously spots with New York Knicks, as you can imagine, and Jaguar cars and State Farm, and we did the Janet Jackson Velvet Rope Tour. You know, it was like all of these amazing things, and I had my hand in it, all
he
of it.
He threw you in it and said, I need you to have creative ideas. You want to work on these campaigns.
I was writing the briefs, writing the pitches, you know, like just, again, wherever I could help, I was doing. And then the agency was trying to win the business for Pepsi. And Pepsi was going through a tough time and trying to find like the next talent, you know, because at the time it was like, okay, you're going to sign a big artist and they're going to be the face of your campaign. And like I said, I've been out in these streets partying a lot.
Hustling. So you're seeing the upcoming talent. Oh, you're like, this person is always popping.
We were out there. Beyonce had just left Destiny's Child, or she was thinking about it. And she had also just done this film called The Hip Opera, Carmen, The Hip Opera on MTV. It was a TV film because she was trying to be an actress, right? Uh-huh. She was trying to leave the... And, you know, like, people weren't necessarily giving her... I mean, now it's like we sit back and we're like, oh, yeah, King B. Like, nobody gonna doubt her, you know? But at the time, it's like, think about it. It's like, how many successful... had come out of groups like that. People were not giving her the credit she deserved. But I saw The Hip Opera, which I thought was brilliant. I think it was like critically panned. Mm-hmm. But I thought it was great, you know? Because like, think about it, like opera being interpreted through hip hop to like a young audience. Holy crap. Like that's...
It's kind of like Hamilton before its time. You know, it's kind of like,
100%. Yeah. I mean... It was just so brilliant. And so we were in one of those creative sessions.
With Beyonce?
No, not with Beyonce. Got it. Just us. Like Spike and the rest of the team were talking about all these artists. And Pepsi did have her like on the short list of people they were interested in. But then in talking about it and going through, it was like, hey, like I just watched this hip hop right here. You know what I mean? And like I thought Beyonce killed it, you know, because she was Carmen. And so Spike watched it and he was like, she should be Carmen in this spot. Like that's what we should do. And he's going to direct it. We sold the campaign to Pepsi.
Wow.
And that was it. I was in like Flint. You know what I mean? Wow. That was it. The rest is history.
And so then you went over to Pepsi after that, or were you still with Spike?
Yeah, I did. I stayed with Spike. Yeah, I stayed with Spike for a while. But then, you know, like my mind started playing tricks on me. Even then, I started to think, if I'm just relying on this pop culture stuff, people won't think I'm smart. So, and I was already feeling it. People weren't giving me my credit for like the small... connections you make that turn into magic.
Those ideas that you know what creativity.
I mean? Like it really takes talent and taste.
It's not just like, oh, I guessed and it worked out. Yeah.
This is freaking mathematics.
It was your intuition. It was everything. Yeah.
Yes. It's all of those things. It's really smart. It's not luck. But I start to feel that like I wasn't being taken seriously. And like I said, you know, I've been the smart kid in school always. I was like, oh, so now what? Like I'm not smart because I'm doing this. So I quit. And this is one of those moments where I should have listened to my intuition, because I tried. I went to this agency where I was supposed to work on smoking cessation. So, you know, like the patch,
really?
Nicorette and all of those, like the gums and things, because it was pharmaceutical. And that was really hard advertising. Only the smartest people went into that kind of advertising, because, you know, you had to know the laws and you had to know all the things in order to create a message that could penetrate and still be legally viable. And so I went to do that. It was a disaster.
Oh, my gosh.
Disaster. 3 months in, I was done. It was finished. And so then, I called my friends at Pepsi for advice, like, you know, because I'd made some friends along the way.
Yeah, of course.
I just wanted, like, advice on, like, what else to do. I wasn't actually thinking about Pepsi at all. Because my opinion of them were that they were all cut from the same cloth. They were all MBAs who went to the top 10 schools, came in as an intern class together, were promoted together. It was a club.
Yeah.
And I wasn't part of the club. I wasn't in. And one of the guys that I've been really close to was like, would you consider working here? We think you'd be really, really great. We could use your perspective. And I was like, oh, hell no. Mm-hmm. I was like, I can't do that.
Yeah.
And so I went in for like a series of interviews.
The old white boys club or whatever. Yeah.
100%.
Right.
They were all wearing like khakis and the blue button down shirts. Oh my God. I looked nothing. I had a nose ring at the time.
Nice.
Like, I was not one of the peoples, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But this again goes back to like my childhood. I've never been.
So you fit right in.
So I got there and the work was interesting. And so I was like, well, you know what? I've never been to Frey before. So I'll give this a shot.
Wow. What was the biggest lesson about working with Pepsi for you?
I think it was the validation of knowing that pop culture can drive business.
Mm.
You know, that was the first time that I knew it for sure.
Wow.
This is not a game.
You know what's interesting is it seems like it drives business, but does it drive politics after what happened?
Yes, Of course it does. So I think this is an even bigger lesson now, today.
Well, with all the artists and celebrities endorsing one party that didn't win, does it work?
Yes, it does work. Because it's about how to focus the message. I think we forget that it's not actually about the artist, it's about the audience. Any brand or political organization that puts their money on the artist and forgets the audience is going to lose.
Ah, so don't put it on the artist.
Don't put it on the artist. The artist is a tool. Every other pop culture avenue, you have a set of tools, and you're going to use all of them to get to the audience. But as soon as you forget the audience, you're dead.
So how do we remember the audience and deliver the message through an artist or an influencer or something like
because
that?
Because it always starts with them. It always starts with the audience. You know, it's like, what do they want? What are they feeling? How are they behaving? You have to fill that void. And then you can fill that void by using an asset that they will listen to. Insert artist or insert platform or league or whatever.
So did Hillary not have the right artist then? Or
No. She didn't pay attention to the audience. So, no, because she had all the right artists.
Right.
Everybody.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, she had me.
She had all the right artists. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
She had you getting all the artists for her.
Yeah.
She had the artists, but she forgot about the audience.
Yeah, but I mean, she readily admits that as well.
Right, right.
You know? Whereas Trump was firmly focused on the audience.
Audience. And audience he had a clear first. Message for the audience.
Absolutely. He knew the gap, and he talked to it.
When you get a new car or a new home, your first reaction might be to say things like, oh yeah, or I can't believe it, or booyah. But what you really want to say is the one thing that can get you the help you need. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm is there with the coverage you need for your car, your home, and even boats, motorcycles, RVs, and other things that matter to you. With a State Farm agent, you know someone is there to help you choose the coverage you need. With so many coverage options, it feels good knowing you can find what fits for you. And when you need ways to get help, State Farm gives you options there too, in person or on the phone with your local agent or on statefarm.com, where their award-winning app State Farm lets you do things your way. So when you need help protecting the things that matter most, remember to say, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. I've learned the hard way that constantly holding on to your emotions and repeatedly choosing to not talk about your feelings will only make you feel worse and worse. And up until about 10 or 11 years ago, I was afraid to talk about my trauma that I experienced. And I know we all carry around different stressors, big and small. And when we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. But therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. And if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Lewis today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/LEWIS.
Win. I mean,
that's it.
That's it. You know, and I know it's like now it sounds easy or making it very simple, and it's hard to do that.
And he executed with his conviction
mercilessly
day after day, and stood by his vision.
All of it. He did use also pop culture to drive the message.
Well, some.
So it's not as if he didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But he had the message for the gap that the audience was looking for. You know, and even though, and that's the thing is that even though we can look at it and say, okay, well, that's a very small audience, but how powerful when you engage an audience that is movable. You know what I mean? Even if they're tiny. Like, and I think that's, again, what we forget. We're like, oh, okay, well, there's this little niche. They're not powerful. No, they're very powerful if you engage them. If you strike their passion or their emotion, they will move. They'll do anything you say without question. They'll forgive you for anything.
Everything.
Anything.
Kill people.
Yes. whatever. You know, and that's the power of great marketing is that you will actually be forgiven. The wrongs will be overlooked because people feel like you've connected in some way.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is the key to building a great brand, in your opinion, and really making an impact on the audience you're serving?
And,
and have it just like grow exponentially and just like... What are all those elements that you've seen? I mean, it seems like you're the top. You've been in so many different brands, part of so many campaigns, so many different sectors, seen all the biggest celebrities build their brand.
Well, in addition to the audience, I think you also have to start with the brand truth. You really can't make it up. You can't go get somebody else's truth and then pretend it's yours.
Yeah.
So it has to start with some brand truth.
So how does someone create that? Is that like a mission statement you mean? Or
yeah,
kind of
it's like
a
mission statement, but it's also just like understanding the brand itself. You know, what role does it play in the world? Because when a brand launches, it has no brand presence, but then it becomes something to people. And I think part of the challenge is actually listening to what it has become instead of wishing for what you want it to be.
Because the audience may take it somewhere on its own.
Yes.
The customers, the
correct.
Clients.
They have already created something. So then you've got to actually listen to that thing. You may not like it, but you've got to listen to it and then figure out how to create messaging so that you warm them to maybe evolve the conversation. But first, you've got to embrace it. Go ahead and give it a big bear hug. Okay, this is what the audience believes this brand is about. And then work through that. So at Pepsi, it was like, okay,
which Pepsi owns?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is the brand for the crazy white boy.
Yeah, yeah.
The one who's jumping off roofs.
Yeah, yeah. The alternative,
flying off mountains.
Like, yeah.
He's doing all kind of, he's got insurance. He's doing all kind of crazy shit.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
The BMX or the skateboarder.
Of that. Yeah. Actually, interesting enough, there was a time, actually right when I started, when there was an urban myth that was released, that yellow dye number 5, which is the key dye ingredient of Mountain Dew, would shrink your package if you drank it.
Yes, I remember this.
I mean, one of the best like counter marketing tactics of all time.
Right.
Like if it's not already a case study, it should be. Like it's brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
Almost killed the business.
I can imagine because everyone's like, guys want to drink this.
I'm not going to drink this, you know?
I'm going to go get Sprite.
But the thing is that the brand truth was not just about like the crazy white boy, but that like this beverage would give you a boost of testosterone. If you were that guy who
people
was walking
believed
around,
it.
They believed that. Believed it. Just got to lean into that belief. You may not like it, but you got to lean in there. And then the solution was that looking at what other audiences also believe that kind of thing and what are their expressions of it. So for black men, what did that mean? Maybe they weren't jumping off the side of the mountain, but what were they doing to express that extra testosterone?
Mm-hmm.
And then go to that thing.
Yeah.
Right, and make do part of that message.
Wow.
It's not the same for Pepsi. You couldn't take Pepsi there. Pepsi does not belong. Pepsi belongs with Britney Spears. Okay?
Yeah.
And all the other pop.
Shania Twain.
All of that. You know what I mean? Pepsi's having a good time.
Yeah.
Didn't want any kind of danger.
No.
You know what I mean? Drinking maybe champagne.
Yeah.
Not drinking Hennessy.
Yeah,
you know what I'm
exactly.
We all know that person. So again, I think that regardless of the brand that I've worked on, it's about accepting the brand truth. And then leaning towards that thing and cultivating some goodness out of it. Because there is good in all of the brand truths. You know, you just have to uncover it and then move your audience to accept whatever evolution you're trying to get to.
Yeah.
Right? Because they got to trust you first.
Right. And so you were at Pepsi for a few years and then was
it
Beats after that? Or was it?
Yeah. I went from Pepsi to Beats.
Really? How did that relationship work with Jimmy and Dre? And how did they either find you or you find them or whatever?
They found me. So I was going through the toughest personal experience.
My husband
had been diagnosed with cancer 6 months, or he'd been diagnosed with cancer in May of 2013. It also come right after, like, at that time anyway, my greatest career achievement, which had been working with Beyonce on the Super Bowl halftime show in New Orleans.
Legendary.
It was just, there are stories about that. That'll be the next time I come.
A friend
visit
of mine
you.
Was a dancer in that show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was just because I think people forget that she sang at President Obama's inauguration. And remember that she was like almost beaten down because she used a backing track for The Wind, and people were saying that she couldn't sing. That's why she did it. Who says that? Like, are you out of your mind? All the receipts this woman has? And like she was a backing track and now she's gonna be panned? Are you out of your And that was like a week before the Super Bowl. He had to get through all of that. Plus, the added pressure was that because of the ban on Janet Jackson, there'd been no black woman on the stage for 10 years. Beyonce was that one. She was like the holy grail.
Pressure.
It was
like
the pressure of the whole moment. The inauguration, which is supposed to be an amazing, beautiful thing. People are coming at you because they're like, you can't sing. What?
It's crazy.
And then you're literally sitting on the burden of carrying the weight of black women everywhere, our redemption. You got to kill the entire performance because that's Super Bowl anyway. So it doesn't matter who you are. That performance is lots of pressure. So coming off a very emotionally, corporately difficult time for me with highs and lows. And then 6 months later, my husband was diagnosed with cancer. Unfortunately, neither of us were new to cancer because both of our mothers had battled breast cancer. And at the time he was diagnosed, my mother was going through her second bout, actually. So literally the world came crashing because it was like my mom was battling her cancer and then he got sick. And it just felt, it just felt impossible. My daughter was four and it was just like, I don't understand how this happens. But we went into like overdrive. It was like, okay, you know, we're going to make the t-shirts. We're going to make the Facebook group. We're going to have the prayer circles, found the best oncologist, all the alternative treatments, everything. And then he died.
Oh man.
Even as I sit here talking to you, like it's still unbelievable to me. He was just so big. His spirit was so big. It doesn't make any sense to me. We didn't plan our life for him to die.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable that could happen.
Wow.
He passed away in December of 2013.
So quickly after he got diagnosed.
Yeah, 6 months.
6 months after.
Yeah, from his diagnosis to his death.
Oh my gosh.
It was very, very quick. But in that process, the gift in it was that we really, I mean, and this is going to sound so trite, but I'm telling you, like, it's the way I live my life now, which is that every day matters. There is not one wasteful day. Every day. And everything you choose to do in the day matters. Because that's what we're faced with. At the time when the oncologist was like, okay, you guys are going to have to be very purposeful. Because guess what's going to happen? Tomorrow, he's going to wake up and something else is not going to work. So you're going to have to decide today what you want to do. And then tomorrow when you wake up, see what's working and then do something again. Okay? And then the next day... And that's where we lived. It was being under the most intense pressure, trying to prepare for the end, but trying to like live for today. It was just...
There was no hope, or they were not giving you like, there's no chance.
No.
Oh my gosh.
We tried. It was 9 different chemos, all the radiation.
Nothing worked.
Nothing
just got worse
and worse. It just got worse. And so by the time it was like October, in fact, October 25th, so anniversary coming up, where it was just, the college was just like, you know, nothing's going to work. And so you guys are going to have to decide what you want to do. Probably have about 3 weeks after that.
Oh, my gosh.
And we were stunned silence, like sitting there like, we don't understand what you're saying. You know, we don't understand what you're saying.
What was he like? What was he like in those moments where he knew there was only a month or a few months left? And how did he handle that? And what did you learn about yourself watching his process?
Yeah. Well, he, you know, it's like so interesting because it's like, I actually haven't really thought about that. He vacillated between being super pissed, very angry about his diagnosis, about being robbed of his life.
Mm.
You know, he was not yet 44. We had a 4-year-old. We're living our best lives, right? And he was really pissed, you know, to be robbed of it. And at the same time, and this is what makes it so complicated, is that, and also part of the blessing, which is that because the oncologist, who, by the way, God bless her, she was like this little tiny sprite of a woman, you know, full of energy and like determination. She did everything. She gave us all the options. But it was her message of like, just do everything. You know, whatever it is that you've wanted to do, do it. Like, don't wait. Like, there's no, don't come back here and hopefully, don't do that. Like, just live it. You know, and so he vacillated between this anger, but then as it was coming true and as things were failing, his body started failing him, he was so urgent, you know, to like live. So it replaced the anger. I feel like it trained my muscles on like living urgently, that there was no other option. We quickly realized that anger has no place. What are you going to be mad? Like, what are you going to do? You're going to be mad for what? You're going to sit there and be upset? And are you going to bicker over something stupid? We don't have time. You don't have time. So now it's like, even, you know, it's almost 4 years. And even now, like, when I get upset about something, it burns so quick. Listen, I used to be the master hoarder of anger and feelings. I would hold a grudge. Like,
years.
Yeah. Woo, man, I was a professional. But now my anger burns quickly. Because I just realized that it has no purpose. It doesn't drive me to do anything better or greater or live any better. So I'm really trying, and I'm still working at it, but like I really do try to remember that.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just shocking. I know. I'm just shocking.
What would you say is, you know, if you're willing to share one of the most beautiful moments that you guys had together in those last few weeks?
Oh, man. There were so many, to be honest. November 9th was our anniversary of our first date.
Mm.
And so that November 9th, actually like posted on Facebook and whatnot, because he was getting his chemo treatment, because we hadn't yet, you know, we were still getting treatments, although we were not staying at the hospital, but he would come in and out. And I was like sitting with, and he was a collector of fine wines, which again is part of the lesson, which was just like, what are we saving these bottles for? So we cracked open this like super expensive bottle, you know what I mean? He obviously couldn't drink it, so I drank it by myself. You know, just sitting on his hospital bed, he's like sitting there with the IVs. And, you know, I was just looking at him and just like, of all the years, we'd been together 13 years, married for 10. Just remembering all of the things and remembering the small, stupid things that I was angry about or that I resented or that I wish had been better or da da da, you know? And we decided in that moment that we were going to confess everything that we'd ever harbored that we'd hadn't talked about.
Holy cow.
Yeah. And it was...
Was some crazy stuff that opened up for both of you?
Yeah, because it was like so stupid and so little. Stuff that you were just like, I can't believe I'm so mad about this, but let me just tell you. You know what I mean? Because it felt like the unreleasing, you know, things. And it was probably one of the most beautiful gifts. Because again, the lesson was that, like, I just can't hold on to anger or little petty things, you know, or even the big things. If somebody does something to you and you're mad about it, like, you need to talk it through. You know, hold on to it. It was a beautiful thing because it was like our anniversary, which we always celebrated. We got married in June, but that was like our anniversary moment. We probably celebrated bigger than our wedding. But it was just to think that, God, we don't have much time left and we've got to release everything that we've got. You know, just let it go. But it also taught me a lot about relying on other people. Up until then, I felt pretty invincible, pretty self-sustaining.
Yeah.
I was Wonder Woman, Wonder Mom, Wonder Executive, Wonder Everything, Wonder Wife, all that. And then you realize that you're truly powerless and that you've got to rely on other people for help. And that's not a sign of weakness, actually, to get help.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
Which has also been great because I don't mind asking anybody to help me.
That's good.
Nope. Now I'm just like, hey, listen. So I got the dry cleaning that I need you to pick
up.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, like the little things and the big things. I'm not at all afraid. And that's why it's like even now when people are they're like, oh, my God, how do you do it all? I'm like, I don't do it all.
Right.
There's no pride in that. I don't find any pride in carrying it all yourself. Like, you think that makes you big and bad? No, it's going to kill you. You know, so you share that weight. Ask people for help.
There's so much I want to continue asking you. We got about 15 minutes.
Oh,
so I want to see
how
much
is possible.
I want to see how much I can get in
okay.
in 15 minutes. And thank you for sharing all that about the process and that experience, because I know that's got to be probably one of the most challenging things that any human could ever go through. So thanks for sharing and opening up about that. Yeah. I wanted to get back to the Beats experience.
Yes.
Because I think there's so much of your life that is fascinating to understand. And, you know, after watching the Defiant Ones, I'm just like, were you in that, by the way?
Yes, I was.
Okay,
yeah,
I'm sure there was a moment where I started just forgetting now because I didn't know about you
I had
until.
Different hair.
Yeah. Which was unbelievable, the Defiant Ones. So I'm just curious how you got involved. It sounds like they snatched you up from Pepsi.
Yes.
What that journey was like.
Yeah.
And kind of like, you know, where you're at now.
Yeah.
In 15 minutes.
In 15 minutes. Okay. Here's the thing. I mean, it really does connect because after my husband passed away, almost 3 months later, and I was just in a vulnerable state. I needed something else to believe in.
Of course.
And by the way, make no bones about the fact that I love to work. I love my work. I love the things I do. I just need to find new purpose.
Yeah.
And he was saying all the right things.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
He
was saying, because Pepsi was big and I was successful and could have stayed there another 20 years if I wanted to. But I met Jimmy. He reached out. He had some people find me. And I was already in L.A. for my sister's wedding. And so I got the call, which was like, Jimmy Iovine would like you to come to his house. And I was like, word? For what?
Yeah.
And I get to his house. And
was Beats big by then? Or was it like...
Yeah. It was big.
It was well known. It was.
Beats Electronics was really big. Beats Music had been launched actually on my birthday, 2 months before that. So it was still new. Very, very new. Jimmy was basically like, hey, listen, I've had many turns in my career. I've been successful at all of them. All of them have been in music, and then now it's like this electronics thing. But he wanted his legacy to be, and Dre, and Trent Reznor, like all wanted to change the way, the trajectory of the music business, because we all know that the value of the music itself was starting to be lost.
Yes. And
right?
This was 2014?
Yeah, it's 2014.
It. So the headphones were big.
Headphones were big.
Now they're doing the music stuff.
Music service
got it,
just
got
launched.
Got it. But this is right around the time when like no one was buying records anymore.
No,
it was just kind of like all streamed or free.
Everything
or downloading.
Was free.
Yeah.
Everything was free. And so artists were no longer making music to sell.
And they were like, how do I make money?
Yeah,
and
they were on tour.
Yeah.
You know, and anyone will tell you that an artist on tour all the time
exhausting.
Will kill you.
It's
you know, it's like freaking people are taking 5 years to make albums. Now you're churning out albums
every
like,
2-3 years. And then
I mean, it's like every year. So in any case, I really loved the message and the fact that because what he was talking about was in the future. And I was in an emotional place where I needed the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I needed something to grab onto that could pull me forward. And so quite honestly, I simply went because nothing else anybody was talking about was about the future. And I was like, if I sit here and just wallow in this grief and like keep doing the things I've been doing, I won't survive. I needed something to just push me forward. So I said yes in that meeting. First time meeting him, he was like, you should just move out here and come work for me. Because
yes.
I lived in New York.
Yes.
And I was like, okay. So I go back to that house and I fly back to New York and I'm like, Ma. So and my mom had come through her battle and was healthy, was recovering. And I was like, so I quit my job at Pepsi and I'm going to move us to LA. And she was like, the hell you are. You know what I mean? Like, it was not happening. But thank God she's a trusting person. And she was like, okay, I'm coming with you because you're probably having a mental breakdown, which I probably was. But yeah, I moved. And I walked in with all the confidence of feeling like, okay, this is going to be the savior for me, provide for my family, because I was also facing the tremendous pressure of thinking like, okay, now I've got a 4-year-old that I've got to support by myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I had not planned on being a single mother.
Right.
That was not the agreement I made. And so I went in feeling like, okay, I'm going to make this work. And literally, it was like my first day, I signed the paperwork. They shut the door. Jimmy's like, come with me. I walk into the room. It's like Dre. It's Trent. There's some people I don't know, but they look vaguely familiar.
Now I know.
It's like Eddie Q and Tim Cook. He's like, so we're going to be acquired by Apple.
Right
and
then.
And I'm like, the hell? What?
Like the first day or first week?
It was the first week.
Wow.
It was like day four or something. In the course of 2 months after that, we were acquired by Apple.
It was like transitioning, getting preparing for that.
Yeah.
Wow.
By June, we're sitting in the like Apple keynote. And being announced that Apple is going to acquire Beats.
Wow.
And then we took the next year to build Apple Music and create a new brand.
Wow.
Which like, I can't express enough how important that moment of time was for me.
I'm sure.
To give me something else to look, to just keep propelling me forward. And that's really what, you know, it's like I've talked to a lot of people now who, especially women who've gone through something like this, you know, lost their spouse. And the number one question is always like, how do you make it out of this period? And my advice is that like, listen, I don't know what's going to help you because grief is different for everyone, right? But for me, I needed the future. I needed the future in order to pull myself out of the current grief, right?
Want to connect with a family member who doesn't speak your language? Then check out the language learning program Rosetta Stone on desktop or as an app. Rosetta Stone is designed to immerse you in the language you're learning through an intuitive process. Plus, the True Accent feature even gives you feedback on your pronunciation. And with a lifetime membership, you have access to all 25 offered languages. Get started today. Visit rosettastone.com/pod50 to get 50% off your lifetime membership now. That's rosettastone.com/pod50 for 50% off.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
And so that period of time, I'm always grateful for because it just meant that like I was building towards something.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And so you were there for a few years.
Yes. 3 years, 3.5 years. And then...
And what was the biggest lesson you learned from Dre or Jimmy?
The biggest lesson from Jimmy is like how he connects with people.
Mm.
You'll be in his office and you will feel like the most important person.
Yeah.
Every time. You know, he's that way with artists. They trust him. You know, implicitly, not because like he's always made the right call, although he'll tell you he always made the right call. But because
he cares.
Yeah, he cares. Yeah. And yeah. He goes the extra mile. He'll make the phone calls. And he's urgent. If you're sitting in a meeting, you know how sometimes you're like in a meeting, people are like, yeah, so next steps are, let's get a meeting with this person. And we're going
to. He's like, on the phone now.
Every time. Don't ever go into a meeting with Jimmy and pretend like you're going to come out of there with like some next steps you got to do later. You better be on the phone in the meeting, be like, actually, just give me one second. Let me call.
Let's
and just
do this
see.
Now. Yeah, yeah.
Just, yeah. You know what I mean? And get the answer. And so the biggest lesson from him was about urgency. And then Dre, it's about maniacal focus. You know, like just the focus. Like, and knowing that you don't want anything to come out that you don't feel proud of. He does not care about your pressure or your timeline.
Yeah, it took him like 10 years to do his album. Or whatever.
Like, if it doesn't feel good, it's not coming out. You know how hard that is? That's difficult in the like face of so much pressure, outside pressures from everything.
When you got some resources and money, you can
be
more
still,
patient. But yeah,
there's still pressure because, you know, people are making their living based on the thing you're going to produce.
Expecting you something.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, there's disappointment from your fans and from all kinds of people who will talk about you, question your talent, question your sanity. And you're sitting here like, but the beat's not right.
Yeah, yeah. Wow.
You know?
Wow. And so you had a great experience there, Beats.
Yeah.
And then you transitioned to Uber a few months ago,
yes,
right?
Yes, 3 months
ago. Why did that transition happen?
Oh,
why not
man.
Stay at Apple? And
yeah. Well, I definitely was on a trajectory at Apple. I'd done the keynote, which was great. And again, lots of praise for that. And then, again, divine intervention. I met Arianna Huffington at a dinner.
She's great.
Oh, she's awesome.
We've had her on a few times.
Oh,
yeah,
my
she's
God.
Great.
I love her so much. And she's another person, actually, talking about lessons with people who also makes you feel like you're the most important person.
She does.
That she connects and she won't let go until you're done with the conversation. You know what I mean?
She's great.
It's such a great thing. In any case, I was talking to her because she joined the board of Uber. Because of all the work I've done in pop culture and blah, blah, and like Delete Uber had just happened when I met her.
Oh, it did?
Yeah,
Delete
it had
Uber.
Just happened.
Because of the, that's a whole other thing.
Travel brand,
the
yeah,
CEO,
there's so many things.
Yeah.
But you know, what was interesting to me was the fact that Uber didn't do anything differently than Lyft or anybody else. Everybody did the same thing. So why did Uber get painted with this like horrible brush? That's a branding problem.
Yeah. The story they were telling.
Yes.
The stories that were happening.
They weren't telling their own story. Everybody else was telling it for them. And so that's actually what I said to Arianna. We had a very philosophical conversation about brand marketing, what it meant. And then obviously, like we've been talking about the evidence of pop culture driving business or destroying it.
Yeah.
And me saying, I was just like, hey, listen, I'm like, freaking, I feel like I'm the foremost expert in this.
Wow.
I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And she was like, well, do you mind like telling Travis this stuff? Like whatever you're telling? I'm like, yeah, okay, no problem. When I have time. And so lo and behold, Saturday afternoon, she's like, come to my house. He's there for an hour. And I go in and I meet with him and it turned into 8 hours.
Wow.
We're just pontificating on the situation. And literally I left there thinking, work. I think I have to go work there.
Oh like, my gosh, yeah.
Oh my God. Am I actually going to do this? Like I'm going to quit my job and go work here. And, like, I try to shake it. I liken it to, like, fall in love with the wrong guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you're just like, God, I really like him.
You're right. You kind of felt like your time had passed at Apple or with Beats.
No,
you're kind of,
no, I no? Could've, no, I definitely had things to do.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't pass up the opportunity. I'd already been in this, like, amazing position to recreate or to create a brand, actually, from scratch. Because we created Apple Music from scratch.
Yeah.
Which, in a marketer's world, is Mount Olympus.
Yeah. It's like you have all the resources you need. You can access anything.
I mean, you're living the life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're good.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And the thought that like I could have the opportunity to have yet another brand on my record that says I did that. Like I did that.
I brought it back or I, yeah.
It's just too sweet. Like I couldn't.
Tastes good.
Yeah, man. Delicious.
Mm.
And then plus, and I've been pretty open about this, which is that like I am unhappy with diversity and inclusion in Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
It is unacceptable.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, it's like you're the only black person probably, right?
I mean...
Especially black women,
you know what I'm
right?
I'm like, there are lots of black people everywhere who are talented. Black women are currently the most educated group in the United States of America. Why can't they get jobs in Silicon Valley? Doesn't make any sense. Makes no sense. So, if there's going to be a brand that's going to be vilified for its lack of diversity, which, by the way, the numbers are greater than most Silicon Valley companies, including some that I've worked for.
Right, right.
And people want to paint that as the scapegoat, fine. let's do that. Because once we can prove that all of these conditions that are being painted as like the horrible things that are happening in this company, and we can fix that, guess what's going to happen? It's going to come for the rest of them.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's like, then I want every company in Silicon Valley. There will be no reason why anybody can't do it. If these folks who have been under the ground, vilified and beaten up for all of these horrible practices culturally, if they can rise from that, there is no reason why anybody else can't. And if there's anything that I want to be my legacy for this time period in Silicon Valley, it's that. Now I've forgotten, like, okay, change the brand and create the brand. I'm going to do that because I do that well. I could do that, no problem.
Sure.
But the real legacy needs to be breaking this cycle. Like, that has to be it. I can't leave this and not have made a difference so that the pipeline is full of people who don't look anything like the people who are currently in Silicon Valley.
Right. Well, you're doing it. You're amazing. This is awesome.
We're going to do it.
Okay, this is the final three questions.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Final three questions. I want to ask so
and
much
it's like
more, but.
Speed round? Or how does this work?
Yeah, I mean, no.
Okay.
Whatever opens up. It can be fast, it can be slow, okay. It can be whatever makes sense. The first one is called the three truths. So I ask this to all my guests at the end of every episode.
Yes.
Imagine this is your last day many years from now.
Mm-hmm.
And you've accomplished everything you want.
Mm.
You've made all the change and impact in the world that you want to make
mm-hmm.
for your legacy.
Mm-hmm.
You've done whatever you want personally,
yeah.
family-wise,
yeah.
whatever. Maybe you've done it.
Yes.
Lived a full, rich life.
Amen.
But for whatever reason, all the information you put out there, your speeches, the books you write, whatever it may be, they're all erased from time.
Mm.
So all people have is this piece of paper that you're about to write down
yes.
three things you know to be true. And you're going to write down three things you know to be true, and that's all that the world can have to remember you by. What would you say are your three truths or three lessons that you would
yeah.
share with the world?
Okay, well, maybe this is a little unfair because I actually just
you
gave...
have it.
Yeah, I just gave a speech yesterday for Forbes Under 30 Summit.
Great.
Where I talked about my five truths.
Perfect. So top three.
Okay, top three. Now, see, why you got to do that? Okay, top three. Well, I've talked a lot about it. So one is to follow your gut. It will never steer you wrong. Like, don't make the lists, the pros and cons, and weigh it out. Because the only reason we do those things is because we're trying to talk ourselves into something we know we shouldn't do. That's the only reason you do the list, you know, because you're like, oh, yeah, this makes sense. Yeah, I'm going to rationalize to
yeah.
myself. But it's like your gut told you don't do that thing.
Right.
And
right.
you writing down a list as to why you should. That's one. Two, bring your whole self to every situation, whether it's work or relationship or whatever else. Bring your whole self, right? Because I think especially in work and in corporate life, particularly, we always feel like we need to hide part of it because the evidence of what is successful most of the time looks nothing like us. And I'm not saying us as in black women. I'm just us in general, anybody. You know, there's a very slim definition of what success is supposed to be and what it looks like. So we often shave the sides of ourselves that are not that thing.
Right.
If it doesn't benefit any of us. You know, and isn't it the world so much more bright and colorful and amazing if we were to bring all of us and our whole thing to the work. And then the third, this is a tough one, the last one, to be kind. Be kind to ourselves and to other people. I explained about that moment on the bed with, you know, my husband on our anniversary where it's like, you know, I just wish I'd been more kind to him
yeah.
and to myself in the process of our relationship. So be kind.
Yeah, those are great truths. Those are great truths. I want to acknowledge you for a moment, Bose, for your
yeah.
incredible uniqueness and your voice and for making an impact on so many people by breaking barriers, by standing up for what you believe in, following your intuition and showing other people what's possible for their life. I think it's unbelievable the example you're setting on how we should all be living our lives. So thank you for
showing
up powerfully
no.
and fully and as yourself.
Don't make yeah. me cry because yeah. I cry easy. You know what I mean?
Before I ask the final question,
yes.
where can we connect with you online or how can we support
right.
your mission or
yes.
anything that we want us to be aware of? Where do you hang out the most on social media? And
yes,
website?
I hang out on social media, mostly on Instagram, Badass Bose.
Badass Bose.
Correct.
B-O-Z.
That's correct. Yes. And on Twitter, same name. That's mostly where I share anything, everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've been told I overshare.
Got
I don't care.
Got it.
You'll find me like living my truths.
Great.
Or in a bikini. Hey, you know what I'm saying? Open for all to see. No problem. That's where I am.
Cool. Cool. Awesome. Is there anything you'd like us to take action on?
Yeah. I want everyone to cheerlead this moment in time for what I'm doing in Silicon Valley. I think there are enough people who point fingers and say that there's something wrong. There's not enough people applauding the small wins. And that's what we need, encouragement. Because when you have encouragement, then other people feel emboldened to help.
Yeah.
When there's so much finger pointing and bad sort of stories and people downing it, then no one wants to help. So I would ask that people help in that they encourage. I recognize that the company and some of the actions are not always positive, but let's applaud the good things. Let's be loud about that.
Of course.
As loud as we are when it's negative.
Right. That's great. That's great. The final question is, what's your definition of greatness?
Oh, definition of greatness. Oh my God, that is such a hard question. Jesus, Lord on high, Father God, help me. My definition of greatness. It's like living at 100%. The totality of things, that whole circle, unbroken. There's so much power in that. It's like, have you ever tried to squeeze a circle and try to break it? You really can't, because it's like the pressure is on every side. You know, you can break a stick. We can't break a circle when you try to apply pressure to it. And I feel like the same thing is for our lives. If you like are living your whole complete truth, the whole completeness of yourself, you can't break. I'm not going to break. Because I'm living my whole circle.
That's great. Bose, you're amazing. I'm so
thank
glad
you.
We got to connect.
Oh
my thank you
God,
very much.
This is so awesome.
You're like a sister now, so thank you for being on.
This is what I'm telling you. We're like,
we're
in.
In
love.
We're connected.
I mean,
we're
so
connected.
Great. This is so great.
I appreciate you. Thank you
and
very much.
And we're going to go back to Ghana together.
I'm in.
I'm saying that now. My tension is
it.
In the air.
Let's do it.
Seriously.
I'm going to come build a school with me.
Yes.
Let's do it.
A girls' academy.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I work with Pencil Promise, and they build schools their own way, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So let's do it with an organization.
Listen,
yeah, yeah.
I'm down for it. Yeah, we're doing it.
I'm in.
Oh, my God. It's amazing.
Cool. Buzz, thank you.
Guys.
Appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
This is great.
This is awesome.
There you have it, my friends. I hope you enjoyed this one. If you did, make sure to share it with your friends on Instagram, on Twitter, Facebook. Take a screenshot of this podcast right now. And tag me at Lewis Howes and tag Bozma, lewishowes.com/559. Go ahead and put that link out there online. If you go there, you'll see the full video interview over on YouTube on the show notes and all the other resources that we talked about. Make sure to dive into Bozma's world and learn more about her. She's a powerful human, and I really enjoyed this interview. There you have it, guys. Again, if you enjoyed this, make sure to let me know. Send me some love on social media and tag Bozma as well, because she is doing some amazing things in the world. The resource link for this is lewishowes.com/559. And as always, you know what time it is. It's time to go out there and do something great.
You can live out your MasterChef dreams when you find a professional on Angie to tackle your dream kitchen remodel. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Visit Angie.com. You can do this when you Angie that.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.